welcome to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the podcast series. I am your host, Mark Suddeth. Thank you for joining me today. We're going to take a look back at the year 2004. This is part five. Remember, I told you, 2004 was a big year. We had a lot of hurricanes that year. A lot of them hit the United States. It was a very, very damaging year. An historic year, as they say. And so we're up to part five here. And in this edition, we will take a look back down the Hurricane Highway at Hurricane Francis, a devastating, large Cape Verde hurricane tracked all the way across the Atlantic. In fact, it had such a long journey that Hurricane Gaston, made landfall first. The G storm made landfall before the F storm. It's kind of rare that that happens, but in 04, that's exactly what happened. Up to this point, the team and I had been in Alex along the North Carolina Outer Banks, and then Bonnie and Charlie in Florida. Of course, how can we forget the harrowing experience of Charlie? And then shortly after Charlie, Jesse and I went down and tackled Gaston down in South Carolina, not far from Charleston, north of there along the Bulls Bay area, between Georgetown and Charleston. But looming and lurking out in the Atlantic was Francis. Again, powerful Cape Verde hurricane came off the coast of Africa in late August, about the last third of August there, moved out into the warm waters of the very fertile Atlantic that year, became a depression on August 24th, and so the saga began. As it goes across, early speculation was it'll turn out to sea, you know, which most of them do, obviously, if everything hit the United States or other land masses of the Western Atlantic, we wouldn't live at the coast. It would just be unbearable. So most of them do turn out to sea, and it looked like Francis could do that. But as we know, you know, things change, and that's what happened, and the Western Atlantic Ridge kind of took over, and Francis was forced back to the west a little bit more each day, it seemed, and it made a course. It set a course. Makes it sound like it's a living thing, but you know how it works. It was headed for the Bahamas, and looked like it would steer clear of the Greater Antilles, the Lesser Antilles in vicinity, and probably cut through the Bahamas as a powerful hurricane. And that's exactly what happened. Now, there's a lot more to it. There's quite a few intricate details here and interwoven stories that I'm going to try to keep straight for you. That's going to be my job here because we had a lot going on. So we had the Hurricane Landfall Project, and that was finally ready for Francis, where we took the old Isuzu rodeo that I had in operation in 1999 through the year 2002. Remember, in 03, Lowe's helped to purchase the Chevy Tahoe, so we didn't really use the Isuzu anymore. Instead of getting rid of it or whatever, we decided to turn it into a crash test vehicle for hurricanes. You know, we got it painted bright yellow. That was John's idea, so we took it over to Mako, and they painted it up nice bright yellow, you know, not quite neon, but it was pretty bright yellow, like yellow submarine yellow, and big old Hurricane Landfall Project decal on the side, or lettering, whatever you want to call it. And we had Edwards Crane put some stuff, fabricated some steel reinforcements and some anchor points. You know, we did the stuff you need to do to turn it into a mobile laboratory or crash test vehicle for a hurricane. But it was very serious. I chuckle there, but it was very serious. We wanted to have something that we could take out. We would tow it behind the Tahoe, and it still drove. You know, it wasn't anything wrong with the Isuzu, but you know, if we didn't have enough personnel or whatever, we'd just tow it behind the Tahoe. And we would leave it. That was the idea. Leave it out as close to the beachfront as possible in the next major hurricane, and record data, wind data, pressure data, and then have all these cameras on it, one of them inside of it, you know, inside of scuba housings. You know, all of this are things that I was working on, and my team was helping me, John with his input, Eddie with his input, Jesse with his input, other colleagues of mine, you name it. You know, that's how we did it back then. We had message boards, we had my website, you know, no social media, not like we do now, not even close. But we did have people, you know, I would blog about it, talk about it on the website, and people would make suggestions, send me emails, oh, you should do this, you should do that, and it all came together. So that's one thread of our very intricately woven story. Another thread is Jeff Flock, my friend from CNN. Remember, he and I met in 1999 covering Hurricane Dennis and then Floyd. He and I became friends, stayed in touch. We were on the phone during Charlie. Jeff had retired, and I'm going to do air quotes, you know, quote, retired in 04, very early 04, from CNN, and was kicking back, enjoying the retirement life, I guess, and I guess he got bored. And he decided, especially after Charlie, he was tossing around the idea even up to that point, you know, maybe we could do like a documentary, a short series, maybe get one of the production companies that he knew in Chicago to pick it up, and maybe we could pitch it to Science Channel, Discovery, TLC, somebody, the Weather Channel, CNN, something, you know, whatever, a short film, or short series documentary film. You know, he thought this would be kind of cool, and we could call it the Hurricane Landfall Project, you know, at least the working title. So throughout the summer, you know, in the barrage of hurricanes we'd already dealt with, Alex, Tropical Storm Bonnie, then Charlie, Gaston, etc., Jeff worked on getting a little bit of seed money, a producer, a camera guy, and an associate producer, I believe he had as well. So a small team, and they were like, all right, we're going to do it. You know, we'll shoot some stuff. We'll shoot some doc, as they call it. Maybe hire a couple extra camera people and a sound guy. You know, do it upright where you have multiple camera angles and, you know, proper sound and the whole bit. And we'll join you for the next one. And the next one was Francis. So there's that thread, okay? And then there's the thread of who all is going to cover it. So Francis is coming into the Bahamas, powerful hurricane, looking like it's going to affect South Central Florida, East Coast there, of course, towards Labor Day weekend 2004. So everybody convenes in Wilmington. Jesse's there. John comes down. Eddie is going to sit out Francis, and it's just going to be the three of us, Mark, Jesse, John, plus this Hurricane Landfall Project documentary crew, Jeff Flock, a guy named Rob Hess, trying to remember his name, it was Casal. I don't know if it was Scott or, gosh, I can't remember, that bothers me. And then another producer, I don't remember her name. There's four people working on this crew, all right? So all of us met at my house over in Brunswick County in Leland. I now live in Wilmington proper. Back then I lived across the river over in Leland in a golf community. And, you know, we had the Tahoe there with all of its stuff, the yellow Isuzu loaded for bear. They had their big Suburban, which news crews always have. You know, it's like very typical. But anyway, I digress. And we were ready to go. So, and then Jesse brought his SUV. John brought his SUV, a Dodge truck that he had. And I would tow the Isuzu behind the Tahoe. Right? So there's this big crew of us, and off we go. Francis is in the Bahamas, menacing the Bahamas. You know, it's a big deal. Major league news event for the United States. It's forecast to make landfall over Labor Day weekend, roughly around, you know, Labor Day is on a Monday. So the weekend leading up to Labor Day is a powerful hurricane. You know, it's really, really got everybody upset, obviously. And off we go, right? So I remember, and these are those intimate details that I promise you, it had been a stressful year. You know, Charlie really rattled us, you know, and I'll always be honest about that. I'm never going to change my story. You know, 10 years from now, I'm like, oh yeah, Charlie was nothing. You know, No. It'll always be the one that woke me up, okay? And where I literally saw the light. You know, oh, can't sit in an SUV in a Cat 4 hurricane ever again. That's dumb. We got to do better. So this is it. This is the start. Francis is truly the start of you got to do better, okay? You got to have common sense here, people. This is the start. But it's very stressful. You know, the job is stressful. Updating the website, everything that I'm juggling. I got a family, young kids. You know, I still have young kids even today. Jeez. And it weighs on you. So I remember we get down to Ormond Beach. And we wanted to stop at Ormond Beach area and get some Boston Market. And I think they were closed. but Papa John's, which was next door, and I know you're thinking, man, how does he remember that? We've talked about this before. My wife says the same thing. How do you remember those? Anyway, yes, Papa John's was open, and we were all there, the crew, my crew, Jeff's crew, everybody, right? And I remember sitting on a bench. I think I called my parents, who lived in the North Carolina mountains, just checking in with them. You know, we stay in close contact. We always have, very close to my parents. Just checking in with them. And I remember just the massive amount of evacuation traffic that we passed south into Florida. You know, Jacksonville, St. Augustine, we even stopped at a rest area near just south of Jacksonville. And just the line of cars. Well, it's too bad we didn't have drones back then, right? But for whatever reason, you know, I think everything caught up to me. And I remember eating my pizza and drinking my Sprite or my Coke or whatever. I just talked to my parents and I sat down. I was by myself, just kind of off to the side on a bench or something. And I just felt horribly depressed, you know, literally like, remember in Star Wars, the episode 4, the first one in 1977, A New Hope, when the Alderaan planet gets blown up and Obi-Wan feels that feeling and Luke says, what's wrong? And he's like, you know, it's as if a million voices suddenly cried out and were suddenly silenced or whatever. And Obi-Wan just, he felt weak, you know, it affected him. The destruction of Alderaan. I just felt bad, you know, like all the stress of all those people, you know, whatever it is in the metaphysical world. I don't know, folks, I can't explain it, but it affected me, affected with an A, just like Obi-Wan in Star Wars when Alderaan affected him. Okay. And I just felt horrible, you know, almost like I was going to cry and just really depressed, like all of a sudden, not a panic attack. I've had those, and this was different. And, you know, kind of like, what am I doing here? Why are we doing this? Why are we so excited about it when all these people are leaving and they may never see their homes again? You know, I felt empathy and it for people, and it all caught up to me. And, you know, I talked to Jesse about it, and, you know, daggone, man, I just feel weird. And he's like, yeah, it'll be all right. And we all talked it over. I talked to my parents, I think, again, and you know, told them about it. And, you know, I was able to kind of brush it off, take a deep breath. We're doing important stuff. We're not out there goofing off. We're not a stunt crew. You know, we have a purpose. And it made me feel better. And people, you know, I didn't talk about it on the website or anything, but I had nothing but encouraging emails from people all along. And that's the way it's always been. Very, very encouraging. You know, I can probably count on just one hand and then just a few fingers of the other hand the total amount of people that have ever been genuinely negative in my 20-something year career doing this on the internet, especially. For real. You know, that are truly vile, negative people. Very, very, very few. Like I said, less than 10. Okay, that's the best way to put it. Everybody else, phenomenal encouragement. I mean, look at you. You're supporting this on Patreon. I mean, there you go. So that helped me. The positive emails come in. We talked about the Hurricane Landfall Project on the website. People knew about it, you know, and it was a big deal. We were going to be doing something that nobody else was doing. There were universities that had their programs for studying wind and other aspects, but we were trying to do everything. Wind, pressure, and video data with unmanned cameras, because that was the idea. Remember, I got to keep harping on that. We're going to leave the Isuzu somewhere. It's going to have several cameras on it, one inside, whatever, instrumentation on the outside, everything properly anchored, data loggers, you know, a lot of money put into it, and a real concerted effort. This was not some kind of a publicity stunt. It was the first generation and the first attempt here at unmanned remote sensing, as they call it. That's the official term for it. It's called remote sensing. And, you know, so I quickly brushed it off. Yep, we do have a purpose. Let's go. You know, I think we're going to help save lives in the long run. Right. You know, this is good. It's good. It's good. It's all good. And off we go. But I just wanted to mention that, you know, that it does affect me. And I remember that to this day, clearly, because I just told you, but that is part of this whole process, okay? Hurricanes do affect me and the rest of the team, believe me. So we get on down to Daytona Beach, which is not far at all from Ormond Beach, as you might know, if you know your geography of Florida. And we checked into the Holiday Inn there near the Speedway. My, how that area has grown. Let me tell you. We waited, because what happened? Well, Francis comes roaring in to the Bahamas, powerful hurricane, and it just kind of starts to slow down. And you're just like, oh, come on. You know, and that's the big worry here. It's just, I mean, hey, like Dorian last year in 2019, man, you know. It's funny how history repeats itself. Not funny, but you know what I mean. And Francis did just that. It came into the Bahamas through the southeast Bahamas, headed towards Florida, but boy, it slowed down quite a bit, and it just prolonged the agony. And we weren't really sure what we should do. Well, what do we do? You know, where are we going to put the vehicle? And a lot of pressure here. You know, the documentary crew filming, we're spending money, you know. And then Florida is running out of gas. Yeah, because it was Labor Day weekend, already a busy time of the summer. You know, millions of people evacuated, sucked up all the gas. There was no plan in place, and there was very little gas. And we only had a little bit, several tanks or cans that John had brought from North Carolina, and that was it. I mean, for real. So we had to be conservative with the gas. We go on, and we kind of wait. You know, one day turns into 2 days, and this thing just slows down to a crawl. It goes across the northern into northwestern Bahamas, finally looking like it's going to come in over, eventually into the peninsula that weekend, Saturday into Sunday, but very, very slowly. It's got a huge eye. I remember that. And it weakens as when they slow down, they upwell water and they weaken and the land friction gets in and all that. So it dropped in intensity down to about 105 miles per hour, Category 2. And it finally was showtime, if you will. And the plan was to drive down to the Hutchinson Island area, Sewell's Point, that area, put the Isuzu out there somewhere, and leave it, see what we get. Now, we were all breathing a very big sigh of relief that it had weakened from 145 miles per hour, whatever it was, to 105. That was a big blessing. But it was really interesting because Jesse and John were very gun-shy about going out on the beach area and getting stuck, and were in the core of the hurricane. And it's not that I wasn't, but I was more resistant, you know, and it's the truth. I was like, yeah, okay. And, you know, they really wanted a plan. What are we going to do? And I thought, well, it's not that strong. We could probably hang out down on Hutchinson, you know? And they were like, nope, not doing it. And they were upset about it. You know, we got to have a backup plan. So I got in touch with Martin County Emergency Operations Center, told them what we were doing. They had heard about me and our group, you know, good reputation, preceded ourselves. And they said, yep, you can come stay safe here, etc. So once we set up the Isuzu, the plan was we would all go to Martin County, EOC, wherever that is. I still don't know where it is. You'll see where this is going. And so we go out daylight hours to Sewell's Point. We cross the bridge over the Intracoastal. No cops, no nothing, no barricades. Just, you know, if you want to go out there, go out there. So as it turns out, several days before we left North Carolina, you know, I was talking about it on the website, what we were going to do, the whole game plan. I get an email from a gentleman in New York, Long Island or somewhere. I don't really remember. Might have the email on my computer. I don't know. Wouldn't it be interesting to find it? But anyhow, you know, he was following everything we were doing and offered for us to stay at his condo in Hutchinson Island, or on Hutchinson Island. And there was, you know, he had like a housekeeper or a service, and they could leave the door unlocked. You know, it was like a nice condo area. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Thank you. And oh yeah, no problem. You can go in, you can do this, you can use it. There's food, you know, several bedrooms. That's, you know, the guy was fairly well off, you know, got a nice condo down there on Hutchinson Island. And I wrote down the information or printed it out or something. And I remember I folded the paper up and I put it in that little center console in the Tahoe. You know, that little thing you open up and you can put like stuff in there. I just call it a center console. It's a little cubby area. And I put the paper in there and honestly, I forgot about it. And that's important to remember, okay? Very, very important to remember that particular detail that a man from New York offered us a place to stay on Hutchinson Island. So, now we're back to the present in the story anyway. We're setting the Isuzu up. We're out there. John and Jesse, it's windy too. You know, Francis is coming. It's just moving so slow that it's going to take a day or longer, 30 hours probably, to get in and out instead of like Charlie or Michael or whatever, you know, in our past experiences that's in and out pretty quick, or Alex, which is like 5 hours total. Earlier in August of that year, my goodness, you know, these, you know, everything's cramming together really quick. Here we are up to Francis already. So yeah, Francis is going to take a long time. But it's still windy and the surf is churned up there. And we get the Isuzu where we need it. And I remember Jesse was like, okay, are we good? You know, you good? Whatever. Yep. He's like, all right, I'm going to start heading back. And I'm going to go to the EOC there in Martin County. I'll see you and John there. Yep, see you later, Jesse. So he took off in his Ford Explorer. John and I finished up a few things, shot some videos, you know, handheld videos, which were all on the Tracking the Hurricanes documentary under the Francis chapter, of course. The CNN guy, Jeff Flock, and his crew, you know, we'd been shooting all along, all of our stuff for this pilot that he wanted to put together. And you know, again, just all this different stuff going on. It's crazy. So we got the Hurricane Landfall Project Isuzu up and running. What does that mean? Well, the anemometer was set up. It was reporting data, recording data as well, and sending it out to our website, hurricanetrack.com. And we had an interface built where you could watch it, where there was a webcam up on the top. I mean, it was working. It was going. And, I had a couple of the video cameras on the roof. These were old Hi8 cameras with 6-hour tapes. And I believe I might have even had a couple of 8-hour tapes if you put them on SLP mode or whatever. You know, and it was running. And I was like, all right, well, this is a good first test, a good inaugural event. Category 2 hurricane, kind of unwinding, not intensifying. It's not another Andrew. You know, it's not some powerful, you know, it's weakening, right? So I felt more confident in my own safety that the Isuzu probably is going to be fine, but it's a good test, okay? We'll take it. I was satisfied. You know, you got to walk or crawl before you can walk or walk before you can run, right? That would have worked. Walk before you run. And that's what we were doing. So we're finishing up and John is like, again, he's like, okay, you good? Are you ready? And like, yep, we're good. I'm going to stay a little bit longer, shoot some stuff with Jeff. You go ahead and go meet Jesse up in Martin County, if you don't mind. And I will meet you there. You know, I'll meet you there later. Okay? Yeah, no problem. See ya. I had no intention of meeting them there. And I'll just be straight up about it. I wanted to stay out and experience the hurricane. I was not scared. And I think the biggest thing that they were worried about, to their credit, is the flood threat. And we talked about that. It was actually a pretty heated debate in terms of where are we going to be. And they were insisting that I get us some refuge that was not on the barrier island. You know, and I was like, guys, it's not Charlie. Come on. And they're like, but, you know, 20, 30 inches of rain and we could get stuck somewhere and we're smarter than that. And, you know, they had a great counter argument to my ambition of wanting to stay out. And I, you know, I wanted to babysit the Isuzu, see how things were going. Since it was not a severe hurricane, in my opinion, I just felt safe, you know? And you know, I had no intention of meeting Jesse and John at the Martin County EOC. So they go, they both left, and I'm out there with Jeff and Rob, and I think the guy's name was John Casal. Come to think of it, the cameraman. I know it's Casal, but I don't remember if it was John or not. But anyhow, I digress. And there was a couple of other extra camera people, but they bolted. They wouldn't come out to the island either. It was funny. They were hired freelancers to help shoot this documentary pilot, and they wouldn't even go out there. You know, that was quite funny. So I remember, now this is where the thing from the guy in New York and the condo comes in. I remember at some point, John and Jesse had left. It's just me, Jeff Flock, Rob Hess, this other producer. I don't remember her name. Maybe it was Deborah something. Yeah, it was Debbie. Can't remember her last name, but it was Debbie. And we were all out there, and all right, it's running. And Jeff was interviewing me, you know, for the documentary and whatever. We were going through all that. And I remember looking over and just, like, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a sign, and it said, Hutchinson Island. And a bell went off in my head. Ding, ding, ding. Where have I heard that before? Oh, yeah. That's where we're going to stay. Duh. There's a guy, and I told you, I remember, oh, my gosh, Jeff, I just remembered. We can stay here. He's like, what? I was like, there's a guy in New York, and he emailed me, and he said that we can stay in his condo, and it's out here somewhere. Whatever, and it's in my Tahoe. And I went in and I got the piece of paper and I called him. I remember I had his phone number. And I called him up and I go, hey, this is Mark Suddeth, the hurricane track guy. Hey, Mark, how are you? And, you know, the phone reception was not the best. And, you know, I told him, I said, yeah, we're going to stay. Sorry I didn't let you know. He said, oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. That should be unlocked. Well, where is it? What's it called? And I don't remember what it was called. You know how condos have a name? I don't remember. But he said it was near the Hilton or something, and, you know, he gave me directions, and now it's starting to get dark, you know, and Francis is creeping closer, and the winds are coming up, 60, 70, 80 miles per hour, gusty, you know, the power's out, it's done, and we start looking for this place, can't find it, you know, it's not like we have now with Google Maps, where you can just punch something in and you're there. You know, there might have been something like that back then, but we didn't have it. And so I had to call him back. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry, but what do we do? He's like, well, you go down, should be a road with something here, and you turn left. And it was just nuts because, you know, Francis was starting to ramp up. You know, the core was getting closer, what was left of it. And it's a little harrowing, and it's getting dark, and it's like, oh, my gosh. And finally, we get to this condo area, and there's sheet metal blowing around everywhere that had come off of all of the carport ramp, what do you call them? They're like, you drive up under them. I guess it keeps the sun off of people's cars. It was just all, you know, shoddy, put-together sheet metal stuff. We don't have that in the Carolinas, by the way, where I live. But down in Florida, it's like these little carport things you drive up under. It's all made out of, you know, the cheapest sheet metal I guess you can buy, and very weakly put-together steel beams or something. I don't know. But the sheet metal's flying everywhere, and it's like, golly. And you can hear it banging into each other, banging into trees, whatever. Only a few cars there from some of the residents that stayed. Oh, I mean, literally just a few. And we're trying to find the condo. It's on the second floor. You know, I'll just make up, you know, 220 or something. And I told Jeff that the door is unlocked. The guy had his housekeeping service go by and unlock the door for us. It's unlocked. All we got to do is find it. And, you know, three bedrooms, a kitchen, everything's good to go. And that's where we'll stay. So Jeff and I go to look. You know, how do we get up? The elevators aren't working. And we go to one end of the building to the stairwell because we're like, yeah, let's take the stairs. And the stairwell has a door. I mean, who does that? It had a door. I guess they do, right? Some do, some don't. But this one had a freaking door, and it was locked. And I'm just like, oh, you know, that's just going to be horrible. And I'm sure there was some swear words said as well. And so we ran down to the other end, and thank goodness that one was unlocked. Otherwise, we'd have been pooched. And so we walked up, we go in to the corridor, it's outside corridor, whatever. And there's room 220. Like I said, I'm just making that up. It was on the second floor. I do remember that. And it opens. Oh, there we go. And we wave down there. Hey, come on up. You know, I remember I had a big spotlight with me. The crew comes up and we all go in. And it's pretty quiet in there, to be honest with you. It's a very well-built condo. It's very nice. And we stayed. And the hurricane is coming. The eye comes over, and I go out in it with Jeff and the crew, and the eye lasts for like 6 or 7 hours. It was insane. I think it was that long. It was definitely long enough that I took a nap in the condo during the eye, and I went back out, and the eye was still over us. And we went over to where the Isuzu was, checked on everything, took some B-roll of it, whatever, and everything was working great. And at some point, I know you've got to be wondering, well, where did Jesse and John think you were? Some point in the evening, they called, or maybe I called them, I don't remember. And I said, yeah, you know, we were getting ready to leave, and it was just too dangerous, which was true. It was too dangerous to leave and drive in this stuff. So I was like, yeah, we're just going to stay here. In fact, do you remember I told you about this guy from New York and there was a condo out here? Well, it turns out it was open. So we actually have a place to stay. And John, I think I talked to him. It might have been Jesse. Doesn't matter. But they were actually very relieved. You know, they were not mad. Or, what? You tricked us. You know, oh, that's great. That's awesome. Good, good. Good for you. You're going to be safe. It was really funny because, of course, I knew that I had planned the whole thing. I was not going to leave Hutchinson Island, right? I wasn't going to do it. So there we were, as high and dry as we could be, myself, Jeff Flock, the crew, Rob Hess, Mr. Casal, the camera guy, and Debbie. And I slept on a pillow top mattress, comforter, whatever. It was exquisite. You know, really nice condo. We had food, we used the stove, and we had bathroom, running water, still hot water in the hot water heater of the condo, whatever. And it was like friggin', you know, luxury resort in a hurricane. Filmed the next morning from the balcony. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I made the mistake of updating the website that morning, and I say made the mistake, you'll see. And I said how, you know, well, I'm still out on Hutchinson Island, and I did this, I did that, and everything's been great out here. And the way the tone of it was, it made it sound like that I was on vacation. And John and Jesse, of course, read it. They saw the website update, whatever. And that didn't sit well with them at all. And they got pretty pissed and, you know, said, we're going to have a real big talk about this later. You know, you did this on purpose. And I came because I was like, yes, I didn't think it was that risky. And it was not good. And again, these are the intimate details. You know, it's not all 100%, you know, everything is, you know, sunshine and rainbows. We have our problems. This was not that big of a problem, but they were upset. And I think the biggest trigger was that I mentioned in the update that I slept comfortably, you know, and I was trying to thank the guy that let us do it. You know, that was the intention here, that, hey, we're safe. We actually got a good night's sleep. We're in a nice condo, whatever. Well, here's where it triggered John and Jesse. They slept on a concrete floor in a hallway with 300 other people, right? And they ate MREs, and we're in there eating microwave food and baking pizzas and whatever. So yeah, yep, that was tense. So we got over it, got past our differences, reconvened the group up in Daytona where we started, and waited. Why did we wait? Anyway, we got the Isuzu out of Sewell's Point and all that, and you know, Francis lumbered its way across the peninsula, kind of out over the Gulf a little bit, and then lumbered its way into the Southeast United States. But we were stuck. Why were we stuck in Daytona? 2 days. Because Florida had no gasoline. Nope. It was a disaster. You guys remember that? It was a complete disaster. failure of the system. And we only had as much gas as we had brought with us. John, like I said, had brought several cans with him. I think I mentioned that earlier. He did. He brought several cans. So we distributed as best we could. And so we just kind of had to sit there. You know, we really couldn't go far from Daytona and do nothing, you know, because nothing was open. We had to wait for the power to be coming back on and for the gas stations to open to pump gas. Because if they were either out of gas or, unfortunately, because they didn't have generators at the gas stations, they couldn't pump gas. That was the biggest problem, to be honest with you. So it became increasingly frustrating, you know, sleeping in our vehicles. The hotel was full of evacuees and other people dealing with the hurricane. And it started to get rotten. It really did. Our morale was down. And we started trying to think of what can we do. So I thought, well, there's a Lowe's over in Ormond Beach, a Lowe's home improvement store. They have rental trucks. Maybe we can get up with corporate and get permission to go siphon the gas out of one of the rental trucks. So that's what we did. The first part, anyway. We got in touch with corporate, the people that I worked with, and no problem. They said, that's fine. You know, so because if the police come by, what are you doing? You know, we have permission. You know, that's not going to go over very well. People take pictures of it and we're on the front page of the Daytona Times or whatever, the Orlando Sentinel, of us stealing gas from Lowe's. We had to have a legitimate reason. So Lowe's said, yes, that's fine. And, you know, we had a contact if the police came by and, you know, whatever. That was all diffused well ahead of time. So there we go. And we don't have a true way to really siphon it. So I remember, and this is how well prepared we were. We're much better off now, trust me. You learn from these things. John had the idea, go over to the garden area, and they have hoses out there, and let's just cut off a few feet of hose. He had a knife, and we'll use that. So that's what he did. He cut a garden hose, a few feet of it, and we found a truck, and he stuck the hose down into the gas tank, pulled it back out, and it was drippy with gasoline. So, yep, there's some gas in there. And we tried to siphon it. And for whatever reason, probably because you're not supposed to suck gasoline, right? You know, and siphon gasoline. That's a big no-no. It didn't work because there was just no way that you could get a breath deep enough to hoist that gasoline out of that big tank and then let gravity and the laws of physics take over and fill up the gas can. Nobody could do it. It was not possible. And, you know, you ran the risk of it going into your mouth and in your lungs, you're done. Really, that's a very, very dangerous thing. So it didn't work. And we were stuck. And we burned gas driving to Lowe's. So it was definitely a loss, if you will. We took a loss on that attempt. So a couple days go by, and 2 days doesn't sound like a long time, but when you're just hanging out in a parking lot, smell to high heaven, hungry, everybody's irritable, can't go anywhere, it's hot, you know, it was bad. Finally, a station nearby at one of the interchanges, somewhere on I-95, opened up. And we all went up there. We were able to get gas. And I think it was limited to 10 gallons or something. I don't know. And we were able to finally get out of Florida and make our way back home and, you know, go our separate ways. That's kind of what it felt like. And it was a very, very trying experience. We were burned out. All of us sick and tired of each other, you know, basically. And didn't even have time or the energy or whatever, or the morale to reflect on, oh, well, the Hurricane Landfall Project idea worked. We got really good data from the anemometer. We got good pressure data. We got these camera views up there. You know, it was just kind of like, ugh, you know, the end game of dealing with all that frustration kind of ruined the whole mission. It honestly did. You know, it felt like, well, that sucked. You know, that's what it felt like. And so, you know, we got back and regrouped, if you will, you know, got our sleep caught up on. And, you know, we were all friends. It was no problem. But it was definitely a trying experience. And it was kind of neat that was all captured, I guess, from Jeff Flock and his idea of doing a documentary series. Yeah, we had some good stuff. Okay, well, you want drama? There you go. But it wasn't any kind of over-the-top drama. That's absolutely true. It was just enough, right? A little irritating. But we made it. And so, all right, we got the Isuzu. It worked. I went over the footage from the cameras, did some time lapses from them. You know, nothing dramatic, nothing like, whoa, that's amazing. But it worked. We had a viable solution here. You know, the anemometer captured good data, the pressure data from the pressure sensor. I sent it all to the hurricane center. You know, at the end of the day, the idea worked. We just had to refine things a little bit. A little bit more communication. You know, you work on things just like in any relationship. And we would move on. And move on is exactly what we did. And that's what we will cover in part 6, which will be Hurricane Ivan. Oh, yeah. Hurricane Ivan. I will tease it by saying, up to the point of Hurricane Ivan, you know, that was the benchmark at the time. And you'll see. We'll talk about it. And if you know the story, and I don't mind at all, you know, if you know the Tracking the Hurricanes is on our Hurricane Track Insider site. I'll put a link to it again on Patreon. All of our documentaries are on there. Go watch it. You can watch the Ivan chapter. It's all there. But it's those stories, right? Behind the scenes. Like I said, VH1, behind the music or whatever. That's what this is for. Those intimate details that I just can't put into a documentary necessarily. And, you know, so this is it. So Ivan will be next on part 6. Can you believe it? And we finish it up with Gene, actually, as we round out almost the entire month of April here. We'll finish up with Hurricane Gene to round up and round out and to close out the 2004 very, very busy hurricane season. All right, so look, as always, you joining in and listening to this means so much to me. I appreciate it, your support, the financial support to keep me going, to support my family, to support this project. But knowing that you're listening to this and I get feedback from you is just fantastic. So keep it up. I do appreciate it. And that'll do it. That'll wrap it up. This has been Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the year 2004. We took a look at Hurricane Francis. Like I said, next week, we will take a look back at Ivan the Terrible. No, it wasn't terrible. It was Ivan the Successful. Like I said, up to that point, the biggest benchmark event of my career. I can't wait to share it all with you. We'll do that next week. I am Mark Suddeth for HurricaneTrack.com. As always, thanks for tuning in to this. We'll continue the journey down the hurricane highway next week.